Good morning. My name is Brian Colligan, and normally at 9:30, I am on the other side of the building across the courtyard hanging out with teenagers, and I'll be honest with you, I miss them this morning. It's great being with you. It's great worshiping with you, but I love our students here. And in fact, this morning, as I was preparing how I wanted to open this morning, I wanted to throw this fact at you. As Barna was doing tons of research on why teenagers were leaving the church, why they weren't any longer coming to the church, one of the biggest things that they said was that Christians feel like hypocrites. Is they tell us one thing, but don't do what they say they do. And so this morning, I come to you this morning as a hypocrite. I am supposed to preach on silence and solitude this morning. And I'm going to be honest with you, that is not something I'm good at. It's not a good thing, actually. As a student pastor, I hate silence. And so when I ask a student a question and they don't immediately answer, I just kind of fill the void. It's not a good thing. But I come to you this morning to confess all that. One is a preamble to the sermon this morning. Also to give you credit to go, you know what, Brian has no idea what he's talking about. That may be true. That may be true this morning, but I am going to go to God's word. And we're going to look at this as we continue in this series of Jesus as the good news. And there's no specific story we're going to look at. In fact, we're just going to kind of examine many moments in Jesus' public ministry where he would do these great, powerful, amazing things and then have to step away, have to take time to have solitude and be with God. So let me start with you as I heard this message and I go, oh great, yeah, Jimmy, I can fill in for you July 7th, no problem. Then I saw the topic and panic set in, right? Right, oh, solitude, no, that's not my thing. Like, if it was fellowship, community, I'm there. Like, I'm your guy, I can nail that message. Instead, it was solitude. And so as I was sitting with the interns, and one of the things as we coach our interns on teaching and preaching, and one of the things I tell them far too often is, if you can't first preach the message to yourself, it's not a message worth preaching. And so this morning, I come to you going, hey, I'm not some sort of sage or some sort of super wise guy who's going to stand before you this morning and tell you exactly how to do this. But instead, I want to come to you as a fellow laborer trying to go, hey, I'm trying to grow in my relationship with God. I'm trying to look more like Jesus. And so I'm wrestling with what does silence, what does solitude really look like in my life, and how do I actually achieve it? And so you're going to hear today a lot of Brian's kind of dirty laundry, if you will, the things I don't like about myself, the things that I've struggled with to get solitude, because I'm hoping, praying that there's other extroverts in the room who get me. And then I've also done a lot of discussion with my wife, who is an introvert, and so I'm hoping to also give you the flip side for those of you who are like, I enjoy solitude. It is my favorite thing. It is my most favorite place, and I do it very well. So anyway, now that I've given you all of this, I'd love to kind of jump in to our message this morning. As we look and examine Jesus' life as the good news always came in the form of massive miracles, great sermons, and after every one of these, Jesus would remove himself. He would get away. So let's look at our first passage. This morning, I'm going to pull out my note real quick just so that I get the reference correct. Of Mark chapter 1. It should come up on the screen. There we go. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Simon and his companions went to look for him, and when they found him, they exclaimed, "Everyone is looking for you." This felt like the most relatable verse I have ever read of Jesus, right? He has this great big moment just the day before. He had performed miracles. He had done all this. And then he takes the time to go get away early in the morning, right? And as parents, you know that is maybe the only time you have of solitude. If you have a toddler or a baby, not even those are quiet, so that's okay. But he finds the time to get away. And the first thing the disciples say to him is, everyone was looking for you. Like, where were you, bro? Like, where were you? Right? And as a parent, you know that expression, right? You go to the bathroom, you come back, you've literally been gone for 5 minutes, and your kids are like, where'd you go? Like, I was hungry and I needed a snack. Our dog is not very smart, but you leave the house, you come back in, and it's like the first time he's ever seen you, right? Like, it's that same kind of thing for Jesus and the disciples as they're going, hey, Jesus, where'd you go? Where have you been? And so this is the first thing I want to draw to when it comes to solitude. is to find solitude, to achieve solitude. If you are a parent, if you are a leader of any sort, if you lead any sort of team, to find solitude, it takes a team effort. What do I mean by that? Again, this week I was trying to find solitude, trying to get away. And in order to make that happen, I had to first have a family meeting with Janelle, me, and the boys. And I had to say, this is the day I'm going away. I'm not telling you where I'm going. Janelle knew. She tracks me everywhere, but that's fine. I said, I'm going to go away. I'm going to take some time to just be alone with God, to practice the solitude, because I cannot stand on a stage on Sunday and tell you to do it if I have not done it myself. And then I came to work, and I had a team meeting with my staff and my team, and I said, hey, guys, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to step away. And the interns, I think, had the most anxiety about it. They're like, but what if we have a question for you? I was like, you can ask any of these other people around here. I promise. They can answer that question. But it took a team effort and a commitment to go, you know what, we're going to step away. We're going to practice the solitude. And as I prepared, all sorts of feelings came up, and my extroverts, maybe you understand some of these feelings. There was a ton of anxiety for me to go, I'm going to step away. I'm going to take this time to just be alone with God. Because that same question the disciples were asking was the one that was worrying me the most. Well, what if they need me? What if something happens? What if they need to get in touch with me? What if, and again, my phone was on. I was reachable, but I needed to practice getting away. And so the other anxieties that came up for me were my own thoughts and fears. Lord, like, what do I actually feel? And do I have to deal with that, right? Like, if I get alone with you, God, what if you call me to something deeper and to something bigger, and I'm not quite ready for that? And so not just anxiety, but fear started to overcome me. And then as I kept thinking about it, this list of just excuses grew. Right, as I prepared to step away, all the more anxiety came up. And for my introverts in the room, you don't get this at all. And that's okay, right? To get away, to find silence, to find solitude, is sometimes very easy for us, for my introverted friends, for my non-extroverted extroverts. But for me, it brought up so much. Because I also think that when we get into solitude, we admit at some level that we're broken. We need some fixing that only God can repair. I think about Jesus and why did he need to step away, right? He was God. He was God in the flesh, and yet he performed these great, amazing miracles and had to step back and had to take a moment to recenter with God. And I don't think it was because he had issues. I think it's because he knew where his strength came from. I also think that if we're real, And those who practice have a normal rhythm of silence and solitude know that energy is not unlimited. That's some sort of law of thermodynamics, right? Or physics or science. I don't know. I went to Bible college. But right, this idea that we do not have unlimited energy. And so to stop and rest, take solitude, is also going, you know what? I know I need to recharge. I know I need to connect with my Father. I know I need this. And so as I wrestled with my anxieties, that's the part that brought me peace, was seeing that Jesus had done this, Jesus had practiced it, and he literally was God, but still needed time to be alone with the Father. And so my anxiety started to calm down, and I started to actually leave the building and find solitude. Let me continue on. I'd love to read to you guys another story of Jesus taking time away. This is in Luke chapter 5. And it should be up here on the screen. While Jesus was in one of the towns, a man came along who was covered with leprosy. When he saw Jesus, he fell on his face to the ground and begged him, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Jesus reached out a hand and touched the man. I am willing, he said, be clean. And immediately the leprosy left him. Then Jesus ordered him, don't tell anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing. As a testimony to them. Yet the news about him spread all the more, so that crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed of sickness. But Jesus often withdrew to the lonely places and prayed. Jesus has this very public ministry with lots of people coming to him, looking for miracles, looking for these things. And the weight and the immense pressure that I can only imagine he felt was just insurmountable. I have a love-hate relationship with a tradition that we have here in students at St. Andrew. It's called prayer walk. It's pretty self-explanatory. You pray and walk, all right? It's not like a big thing, and it doesn't take a lot of work. But what we do is we have our students walk through prayer prompts at the end of every trip. And it's an opportunity for them to pray, one with God, but also listen and hear from God. And the reason I have a love-hate relationship with it is because I love the outcomes. I love watching students go through this and have this moment with God, this ritual, this practice, this rhythm. And yet, I hate it because I watch the spiritual wrestling that happens during it. Because what happens is I watch students go through every prompt and read, and I watch as God speaks to them, and I stand at the very end with the rest of my leaders, and we get the opportunity at the very end to pray with students. And as you can imagine, I get to pray with many of them. But to hear the deepness of their heart and what they're wrestling with, right? The loneliness of being a high schooler, the loneliness of being a middle schooler, the hard decisions that they have to make, and that weight is heavy. And it's not a burden I enjoy carrying, but it's a burden I'm willing to carry. As I imagine Jesus, the burden of carrying our sins upon the cross, right? But he took it willingly so that we could have relationship with him. I take on this role as pastor, as shepherd, willingly because I desire to see our students come to know Jesus. And this morning, I come to you desiring that you grow in your relationship with Jesus this morning. And so I am coming to you not, again, as someone who knows silence and solitude extraordinarily well, but one who is trying and actively practicing it because I want to grow in my relationship with God. And that burden I feel. As I talk with the pastors on our staff, like Jimmy, Kim, Arthur, we feel that spiritual weight and burden. And I want you to hear, it's not you. It's not you at all. We love you. In fact, you are what kind of makes our job the best part. But what we feel is the weight of your spiritual life and the weight that there is wrestling for your soul. It's why I love student ministry, is we play a life or death game. If we communicate the gospel clearly to students and they accept Jesus, we've won a soul into heaven. Life is given. If we lose that fight, if we don't communicate it clearly, if we don't live a genuine life with them and walk beside them, we lose. Right? We are constantly in a fight, and that gets tiring. And so we need to return. We need to retreat. We need to rest, which is why, honestly, I struggled with this verse. In verse 16, it said, but Jesus often withdrew to the lonely places and prayed. I'm telling you right now, go fellowship with God, get one-on-one, but be lonely? Like, be lonely. That word drove me nuts. And so being that I went to Bible college, as I referenced earlier, I started to do a word study. And so I was like, okay, surely this is different in another translation. I can find a more positive word than lonely. So I went to the ESV, and it used desolate, which felt even worse. It did not feel good at all. And so I was like, desolate. Well, maybe I'm defining desolate wrong. And so I looked it up, and I have it here in my notes. It's an adjective. The impression of bleak, dismal emptiness. Utterly wretched and unhappy. Again, it was not helpful in any way. I'm like, man, it's only getting worse. I hate being lonely. I love being around people. Desolate sounds terrible. Okay. Let's go to the Greek. Maybe that will help me. And so the Greek word, and I'm going to, again, I'm not Greek and I don't speak Greek, but epinuic, which in every occurrence of epinuic within the New Testament, within the gospel writings, it's referring to wilderness or desert, which some of you are like, okay, I can do wilderness, I can do desert. Also, terrible for me. If you know anything about me, I hate camping, I hate being outdoors, like, so I'm supposed to be lonely, desolate, and outdoors. I don't like any part of this, God. This is not comfortable. In fact, everything about this feels like sandpaper, right? And so I had to find this moment and understand that wilderness and discomfort is actually something I should seek on the regular in my Christian life. Is that if I'm seeking discomfort, this place of comfort, of being surrounded by people and fellowship and worship is where I am comfortable, but the Lord is calling me to greater depths and to seek discomfort by being on my own. And so I challenge all of you is that there is some sort of discomfort for each of us. For those of us who are more extroverted, we find fellowship and togetherness very easy. We can come into this space and we'll meet new people, we'll shake hands, we'll have a great time. But for us, the discomfort is to go and be alone with God. It's easy to sing his praise in a room full of people. It's harder to sing his praise when we're dealing with the actual feelings and hurts that we have on our own. And for those who are introverted and enjoy solitude and find it very easy, my challenge to you is to seek discomfort in community. Is that the transforming work of God happens when believers come together and communicate that truth back and forth and grow in relationship. And so as believers, we all need to seek discomfort, whatever that is, because discomfort alerts us. It lets us know that something's wrong. As I've grown older and I bend over to pick things up, sometimes I'm alerted that something is wrong. I experience great discomfort in my back or my leg or whatever. Also, when I get nervous, I overshare, so here's an overshare. On middle school mission trip, one of the girls challenged me to a toe touch contest, and I wasn't going to turn that down. And so I did it, but then all of a sudden I had great discomfort. I had pulled my hamstring because I'm old, right? And so we need to seek discomfort. We need to find those places where it exists in our lives and go, God, you might be calling me to greater depth. You might be calling me there. So as I begin to wrap up, and I'm not nearly there yet, I have a couple things. These are a couple things that I learned practically in trying to seek solitude that I want us to try and just understand. The first of which I mentioned earlier is to find solitude, it takes a team effort. I don't care if you're what kind of team you're a part of, it takes a team effort to go and find solitude. Particularly in the season of being a parent. It takes a team effort to get the kids someplace safe so that both maybe you and your spouse can go enjoy solitude apart from one another. Wow, that would be amazing, right? To find solitude when you're on a team or a leader, it takes informing the team, letting the team know, shutting off your phone, cutting off the email, and going, I am seeking this so that I am better in this. The other thing I learned in silence and solitude is that it's not always quiet. Is that sometimes solitude can be very loud. Because I believe God always and is always, always seeking to talk with us, but until we stop and actually silence everything else, we can't hear. My moments of solitude this week were incredibly loud and incredibly convicting of the Lord going, Brian, you have to get alone with me. You have to deepen this relationship. I love you, I care for you, but you have been ignoring the phone call way too long. You need to come and meet with me. The third thing that I learned in silence and solitude is that for it to truly be achieved, you have to go all in. You can't go, well, I'm going to listen to some music. I'll just leave my text messages up. I'll change my focus time. No, you've got to go all in. You've got to step away. You've got to open up the Bible and spend time alone with God. Don't play at this thing. Go after it. So how do we practically do this? Because I know many of you have heard this. You've heard about silence. You've heard about solitude before. But how do we actually achieve something like this? How do we actually do it, right? These were the things I learned. Here's how I think we actually do it, how we actually apply silence and solitude. And the first of which is this, is find rhythm. This is what I think we need to do when we leave here today, is find a rhythm. Summer, I was just talking with some of my adult leaders, summer is so crazy. There's no rhythm to anything. There's kids' camps, there's the pool days, there's this thing and that thing, and everything's coming at us super fast. But as you prep for the school year, as you begin to talk about what next year looks like, I pray that as a family, as a couple, as a group, as a small group, you start talking about what is our rhythm going to be? Where are we going to find retreat as a family? Where are we going to find time to take away, to step out of our normal and go, you know what, we're going to take solitude. We're going to take this time to seek after the Lord in quiet and still places. Because this is something Jesus did, and he did it so regularly, and he did it at times where there were big things and little things. And so my first piece of advice is find a rhythm. The next thing is find silence and solitude whenever a big thing happens. One of the last stories I wanted to share about Jesus is when he finds out that John the Baptist has been killed, right? This is his cousin. This is the man who first announced he is the Messiah. He leaps in his mother's womb to announce that Jesus is coming. When he finds out that he has died, Jesus again removes himself and takes solitude. Life moves fast. Big things happen really quick. And life just kind of continues to like fall like dominoes. And unless we stop and recognize that some of these things are really hard to deal with, and we need to recenter, refocus, and get with God, then they just keep spiraling. They just keep falling. And we never seem to find respite. We never seem to calm down. And what I mean by that, and here's where I watched that play out practically for me, is in a few short days, I leave for Camp Impact, right? And the last thing I wanted to do was step away from the office and step away from the emails of parents who are signing their kids up late or what, you know, whatever. And yet the Lord kept pushing this upon me. Brian, take solitude, take solitude, take solitude. And the calm and the peace that I have this morning over Camp Impact would not have been there if I hadn't stopped and let the spiral stop and go, you know what, God, I'm just going to listen to your voice. I'm going to spend time with you because I say that I love you. I say that I know you. But Lord, I'm going to take the time to do it. So find a rhythm. Allow yourself the space to connect. And then finally, we need to start practicing the biblical principle of snack and a nap. And what I mean by that is if you're a parent, you know this principle to be all too true, that our attitudes can dramatically change with just a snack and a nap. These are restful things. One of my favorite stories is from the book of Elijah, or is the story of Elijah, where he calls down fire from heaven, burns the prophets of Baal, and then is immediately just full of anxiety that the king's going to kill him. He's worried. He's crying out to God. And so God tells him to wander into the wilderness to find alone time. And what does God tell him to do there? Take a nap. Your attitude's bad, Elijah. Go take a nap. And then God wakes Elijah up, gives him a loaf of bread. So he's even like, carbs are good, man. He eats some bread and then take a nap again. This biblical principle of rest and seasons is found throughout the Bible. And so we need to stop ignoring it in our own lives and really start to invest in a nap and a snack, right? After church today, go home, take a nap. I give you permission. Honestly, if you napped here this morning, good, I'm glad, right? You practice that principle. Why do you think we give you coffee? You need a snack, we can't give you a nap, so we caffeinate you, right? Like, it's all strategy, it's all there. We're practicing biblical principles. But this is my encouragement. And this is not, again, I wish I could go, I've had years of practicing this. I've maybe spent a week this week trying to do it better. Is take the time. Because what God wants to reveal to you can't always be revealed in a big space. It can't always be revealed when there's all this noise happening. The peace that he wants to give you in the turmoil, in the spiral of your life, can't happen unless we stop and focus our center back with God. Jesus did it, and so I want to do it too. And that's my encouragement to you, is that if we want to grow and be more like Jesus, then we need to step away and grow close with the Father. Let me pray. Father in heaven, I thank you for your Son. I thank you for the fact that God, I can come into relationship and into community with you, even though I am so loud and so not quiet. And God, I enjoy your people, but I thank you for the time that we have this week to get alone, to get away, and to hear your voice. Father, I pray for the people in this room, for this congregation this morning, that they would practice, Lord, in their own way, solitude, getting away, finding time. And Father, I just ask for your mercy, that, Lord, you would grant us solitude. And when we find it, Lord, you would be ever present to speak in loud and radical ways. And it's in your name I pray.